Okay. Thank you, everybody. We're going to stay on schedule here. And I believe we're after 3:00 A.M., we're going to have lunch and then kick off the afternoon session. Again, just want to remind people that we do have plans for this evening. If you want to join us, please let us know. Next on the docket is 3:00 and CFO Pat Campbell. I think some of you probably went to the Investors Day on Tuesday, and so this will be a little bit of a rehash of that of some sort. But maybe we can ask some questions that weren't asked at that event. I actually didn't go, so I'm not even sure who said what and where. So anyways, with that, Pat, maybe we can, if you want to give us a little bit of a state of the union for a couple of minutes, and then we'll go into Q&A.
Yeah. Thanks, Scott. As you mentioned, we did have an Investor Day up in St. Paul on Tuesday. One of your colleagues reported it as Minneapolis, okay, which is kind of we are in St. Paul, not Minneapolis, okay? So people kind of.
Well, maybe it's the same colleague who's been writing up all of my meetings.
No.
Who's going to get a tail whipping when I get back to New York?
No. I did not say it was Morgan Stanley, okay? It was somebody else who kind of referred to us as in Minneapolis. And for people that are from the Twin Cities, kind of a little bit of a war between the two sides. And the Republican convention, by the way, was on the St. Paul side, not the Minneapolis side.
Well, you guys got to keep your bridges together. The first thing you got to do.
Well, that's the Minneapolis side, yeah. So that's a very, very unfortunate situation. What I thought I would do is on Tuesday, and first of all the information from our Tuesday meeting is on our website, okay, so you can have access to that. What we did is, first of all, we did not give any financial guidance or change in guidance at that meeting. As a matter of fact.
We'll do that today, right?
I did not present, okay? I did not present, and that was on purpose, okay? Because the reality is we have nothing new to say about it. But George Buckley, who's the CEO, Chairman, and President, gave kind of an overview of where the company is going, our performance through the first half of the year, talked about our growth aspirations, where we see some opportunities there. It's more of just kind of an update. What we really want to do is, in our investor meetings, is get people to better understand a number of our businesses. And for those of you who cover us or know us very well, we are a difficult company to understand and to fully recognize that. We've got about 35 operating divisions. We compete on a global basis. We're in a number of different business segments, all the way from consumer to healthcare to industrial to electronics. So it does take a while to really understand. So what we tried to do this time was to lay out further understanding of our consumer business. Mona Zoghbi, who runs that business, they've done a marvelous job here. If you look at our performance through the first half of the year vis-à-vis the retailers or versus the other consumer suppliers, we've done really a nice job, and the team there really deserves a lot of credit for that. We also then talked about, I guess preceding that, we gave an update on kind of the LCD film business and then talked about our film franchise and really a number of great growth opportunities we have within our film business. On the LCD side, just I guess piece of information, Mike Kelly, who runs that business, gave an update on where we're at on kind of the LCD film side of the business, specifically in the TV market, where I think most of you who've been following us realize we've been going through a change in our penetration attachment rates within TV sets here starting earlier or tail end of last year to the point that in the second quarter, we had a very sizable drop-off in our business in the second quarter, and that will continue from a year-over-year basis into Q3, Q4, and probably into Q1. But on a sequential basis, we've pretty well reached where we think from a bottoming standpoint in that business. And that's a fundamental shift from the OEM's perspective on their ability to design TV sets that still meet consumer demands. They've lowered some of the specification requirements in the set. They've improved some of the performance of some of their light transmission to the point where some of our film products really were no longer required. We've gone from something that, say, maybe a 60% penetration in TVs down to something that's probably a little bit under 10% now. And our challenge right now is how do we earn some business back in that marketplace. Then we had a good review of our emerging market business, which is about a third of our sales, with a specific focus on our Latin America business, which is over $2 billion. It's a part of the geography that we think is underappreciated relative to its current growth potential. And it's been growing, you know, very, very rapidly at very good margins. And then we wrapped up with a review of our electrocommunications business, which is housed in Austin, and did a deep dive in one of our divisions, our electrical markets, which is very similar to an update we gave in the December meeting around our abrasives business. So our intent in our investor meetings is to give people far more visibility exposure to many of our operating divisions, because they are, you know, kind of different, you know, one versus the other. But what we've been concentrating as a company over the last couple of years is to broaden the performance and strength of a number of our core businesses, improving things like abrasives, like electrical markets, like our OHES business, our health and safety business. We even talked about our personal care business, which provides closure devices for personal hygiene products. That all these businesses are fundamentally a lot stronger than they were, you know, going into 2000. So, you know, we've been improving across the board. You know, if I look at the company today, we're a lot broader, a lot stronger than we were when we were probably back in 2001, 2002, where we're really kind of counting on pharmaceuticals, optical film, and coming out of effectively the crash of telecom at that point in time. So we think we have a much broader base, a much solider company, and one company, a company that's really primed to kind of grow, you know, into the future. So, you know, I think our first half results kind of speak for themselves. Sales are up 9%, EPS is up 11. If you exclude optical, sales are up 12, EPS is up 20. Our margins are in the 22-23% range, and returns are greater than 22%. So we feel very good about our first half performance, recognizing the nature of where the economy is, as well as the optical film business. And again, our focus is really on trying to establish a very successful portfolio of businesses on a going forward basis. So I guess with that as an intro, maybe, you know, I'll turn it to you, but I assume you have the first question.
Sure, I reserve that right. I have the microphone. All kidding aside, I think one of the things I get a lot of questions on 3M lately is, and I hate to start with the nitpicky stuff, but FIFO accounting and the fact your raw material costs went up substantially at the beginning of the summer and maybe early into the summer, which could give you a pretty nasty headwind into the back half of the year. And then second, just currency. Currency's been such a nice tailwind for you in the first half of the year. And now with the dollar strengthening, you know, I think we're somewhere maybe 3% year-over-year negative on the dollar, but that's going to go neutral pretty fast. Any comments on how you can...
Do you have a strategy question or anything? Or are you...
No, I'm going to just bust your chops on...
Okay. I mean, you're just like a conference call or something here, Scott. if I could, on the kind of the FIFO piece, I don't lay awake at night worrying about it for the following reason. It's a two-pronged answer. One is we have had and will continue to have a round of price increases going after the you know, kind of cost side recovery. We're a little bit unusual, possibly, when you look at our material costs as a percent of sales. And we run about 25% of our cost, of our sales is material and purchased products, which I think is probably unusually low for, I'll call it the industrial, kind of the industrial space.
Average
so
50, yeah.
When you kind of put that in context, we're very, we're involved a lot from a vertical integration, you know, value stream, okay, of our products. That's part of the reason why our margins are so, you know, are so high. So as we work our way through that, you do the math and say, I think we had 3% material in the second quarter increase. That translates into something about a one-point price increase that you have to have across the board, not completely insurmountable. Especially if you back out the electronics piece of our business and so forth, and especially the optical impact. I think it's a completely manageable situation for us. Foreign exchange, it's kind of interesting because some people don't give us credit when foreign exchange goes up. Now we get criticized, okay, when it kind of goes on the downside, on the negative side.
Sure.
I'm not saying that's from your side, but we kind of do get that from some people that follow us. It's been a tailwind for us this past year. You're absolutely right. Now, how we think about the business, though, is we don't like to plan on a FX gain to run the business. We try to use that opportunity to either invest in the business or, in this particular year with optical falling off so rapidly, it's actually been a good buffer, okay, against some of the optical declines. If the dollar remains strong, first of all, we do hedge half of our exposure, so that gives us a little bit of a kind of a recovery time, a little bit operationally to put in place any actions you need to have. We try not to seduce ourselves into an environment that is a weak dollar is a sustainable position. Our supply chain strategy is around getting closer and closer to customers. We're not going to change that at all because of where the dollar is going. As a matter of fact, it actually plays into it, okay, if the dollar continues to strengthen, it just reinforces the need to do that. We're doing that really for driving more growth, getting better service, getting better inventory turns, and the like. It will be a little more of a strengthening dollar environment. Of course, the more concerning side to me on that part of it is you say, "Well, why is the dollar strengthening?" Part of it's Europe is slowed, okay?
Yeah.
Of course, we've seen the Western Europe slow really the first half of this year. In our results here in the second quarter, I think we've had good results on a year-to-date basis, even with the U.S. economy in the slowing and really Western Europe already being there. From that standpoint, I think we're in a pretty solid position. It will be an issue for us because, especially on the translation side of it, because there's not a hell of a lot you can do just on the literal translation of results. They can offset that. We will obviously do our best to counter that move.
I think that lends itself well and it leads itself into the supply chain question, which is such a big deal for you folks to fix, I suppose. I mean, you're a huge net exporter compared to most of our companies. I think George at one point said it would take 7 years, but that was a couple of years ago. How would you think of where you're at in that process right now?
I would say we're continuing along the lines. I guess I could say we're on plan to do that.
Does that mean year three of seven, or have you been able to take the seven down to five?
Yeah. First of all, it's interesting, is it five or seven, whatever the right period is. The right, of course, long-term answer is, you know what? You're probably never done.
Right.
From a standpoint that emerging, the growth in the world will continue to expand longer term, faster outside the developed world.
Sure.
There'll be a need to constantly be putting more and more capabilities in the emerging part of the world. We're pretty well set up in Latin America today, but where our biggest growth needs are really in parts of Asia as well as Central East Europe is really where our focus is from a supply chain standpoint. I would say, when you kind of say, where are you through some of the heavy lifting, okay? The reality is, I would say over the next 3 years or so, we'll probably be through most of that, but there will continue to be needs. You take China as an example today. I don't know the exact number off the top of my head, but I think we probably only manufacture realistically about a third of our products in China for China today. We have some pent-up needs in China even as we speak. We can't literally build plants fast enough to satisfy, you know, that localization need. So there's still quite a bit of work, you know, that we have to do there.
Is that within your 17 new plants that was planned, or have you taken that number up?
No, the 19, you know, we had 19. We kind of gave an update on that on Tuesday. 13 are kind of completed, up, you know, up and running. We've got one that we kind of put a permanent hold on that was related to the optical business, and then the other five are in various stages of completion. What I try to remind people, though, is to, you know, some people think of 19 as being a big, you know, kind of a big number, and maybe we made it a big number, you know, up front. But, you know, about half of those are truly new facilities. The others are kind of plant expansions that we have. We have 150 manufacturing sites across the globe. So when you put in the context of, you know, 9 new versus 150 base, you know, it's not that, you know, it's not that big. You know, our business is growing over $1 billion plus of sales a year. You know, a lot of this is just natural growth that's going to, you know, feed itself. So I feel in pretty good shape there.
Let's get the mic runners out and start thinking about questions for the audience. While we queue up questions, maybe we can talk a little bit about the balance sheet. You've got one of the strongest balance sheets in industrials, arguably the strongest. I mean, GE is a triple A, but kind of trades as a double A. You're a true double A. What? How do you really lever that in a down cycle? I mean, do you think in terms of getting more aggressive in acquisitions as things get cheaper? Your ability to buy back stock is certainly enhanced. Does it ever make sense to think about moving more towards a single A and getting more aggressive? I mean, your stock is really stuck in the mud. I mean, one could argue that I think in the last day and a half you've had a lot of companies complain about their valuations, but not many have been willing to kind of stand up and buy back stock in a more aggressive fashion. You folks have done a great job, I think, in the last year or so. But does it make sense to, given the predictable cash flow of 3M, the diversity of your markets, think in terms of more aggressive capital structure?
Well, first of all, to kind of address the balance sheet we have as being kind of a double A rated, part of that is because of our very stable cash flow capability, which is a great thing to have as a kind of CFO of a company. I came out of the auto industry where cash flows were completely, you know, unpredictable. Or had a huge peaks, you know, peaks and valleys to it. You know, having a balance sheet we have is a huge competitive asset in a kind of a softening, you know, softening world. And that's part of the reason you want to have a strong, you know, a strong balance sheet. Most people have a tendency to look pretty good on the upside, and the question is, I think what differentiates people is really when things get tough, and that's where we think we'll even do better. You know, we've had a repurchase. We've got a $7 billion authorization program that was to run over 2 years. It'll take probably a little bit longer than that. And we're buying back somewhere in the order of a percent of our shares on a gross basis every quarter. I think that's a pretty reasonable, you know, program to be undertaking, especially when you've got a competitive dividend out there as well. So I don't, you know, really see a significant change, okay, in that approach. It will take us through the end of 2009 to use up the authorization, you know, we have. Will we be marginally, you know, more aggressive at certain times, you know, possibly. But I would share other people's probably view about valuations of our company.
Okay? Right. Sure.
That I do believe that the company is a very, you know, is undervalued, okay, but you know, we also take the view that we have to show people, you know, we have to deliver results, and you know, our valuation will reflect our, you know, our performance over time. We just don't want people to miss the opportunity. You know.
Why don't we take questions from the audience now? Don't everybody stand up at once.
Sounds like it's got to be somebody to be there, you know, kind of break the ice, right?
Right, Ed.
You've got these slides in here about your solar business, and that it's a $200 million segment today, growing at 20%. and you show that the overall size of the market is $20 billion going to $50 billion by 2012. So where do you see yourself in that? I mean, you're just going to grow at 20%. That's not even what you have the market growing at. Where are you going to really go with it?
First of all, thanks for bringing that out. In the presentation we had on Tuesday, we talked a number of areas that we saw were high growth businesses that we're trying to organize our efforts around, solar being one of them, oil and gas is another, air and water filtration, mining mineral is another one, food safety, as well as power transmission. But back on solar, we have a number of activities across the company that are film optical related businesses, some in the electrical area that currently feed into the solar space. Now part of the question becomes what your definition of solar ends up being. As an example, we have a business that is in, say, window films that is great at light management, managing infrared rays and so forth, managing cooling in buildings, protection buildings and so forth, that also kind of fits into a broader definition there. We think solar definitely is a winning space. We're putting some capacity, some of the capacity that we're talked about is actually in the ground around solar film applications. We're involved in a couple of different segments. In that presentation, you'll see kind of how the solar manufacturing space works. But importantly, what we're trying to do is help the industry get to a much lower cost per watt is what we need to try to enable. And that's what 3M's very good at. You look at the LCD industry as an example. We helped effectively the commercialization of LCD TVs through our film applications. We think this is another case where our innovation capability can help the solar industry get to where it needs to be. And it is a it's got an opportunity of it being a $1 billion business over many, many years.
Pat, it's not clear to me what that product really is. What
Well, there's some film products that we make. There's some encapsulating capabilities that we have. There's some things we call Fresnel lenses that we currently already manufacture. And effectively, a lot of it is about what you want to do in solar cells is to focus the energy, okay, on the cell itself. And a lot of our light management capability provides that capability. And the other thing is that you need to have very durable solutions as well. And we've been doing durability testing for many, many, many years with many, many of our products. A lot of our micro applicated films today have very high durability standards. So there's a number of products that as that industry starts to evolve, I think we can become a bigger and bigger player.
Okay. I get it. Next question. Go ahead.
Pat, when George came in, you guys made a very conscious
Oh, I'm sorry, sir.
No, no problem. You guys made a very conscious shift from a margin focus towards a more growth oriented focus. And one of the key drivers of that was that you were going to basically take the shackles off your phenomenal R and D organization. At this point now that we're several years sort of down the road on that, do you feel like you're earning a return on that? What's the new product outlook look like? And do you feel like that has been the right strategy for 3M?
No, that's like what do you expect me to say?
Yeah, that your boss got it all wrong.
Like I'm part of that team too, so it's like you want me to shoot myself in the head or what? No. Can I try to give you maybe a little longer horizon on that?
6 months?
No, I want to kind of give you my I've been there 6 and a half years, okay? So I kind of want to give you a little bit of a kind of a time horizon on this. Is that when McNerney came in, and I joined shortly thereafter, it became very clear that there was a lot of operational improvements the company could make. There was a fair amount of discipline that the company needed. The initial focus was we needed to grow the business, but we also had to drive a lot more operational execution into the organization. I think you've kind of seen that through our margin enhancement. It would be unfair to say that the sole purpose during the first part of the 2000s was all about margin expansion, okay? I just want to try to clarify that. The reality, though, is we didn't get the broad growth that we needed, so consequently some of the margins actually did get higher, which I surely don't feel bad about whatsoever, because the leverage on our volume today is just enormous. And it was always believed that as you got to the mid part of this decade, 2005, 6, 4, 5, 6 probably in that time frame, that as our initiatives and our productivity programs reaped a lot of their benefits and were now sustainable and continue to work, that the acceleration of the growth programs had to take place. As George came in, which is a great move from an energizing the R&D community, okay, and the like. We have a very highly energized R&D organization, more so than we did in the early parts of the 2000s. One thing a scientific community does not like to be held accountable for, okay, is performance from a discipline execution. Because let's face it, the inventive process, okay, is not okay a discipline process. So we've kind of freed up the organization to work on that. I would say that I feel a lot better about the idea generation, the new product flow that we have inside the company today than we did back in the first part of the 2000s. Our portfolio was too narrow back then. The number of businesses that we're focused on was too narrow. We've broadened that. That has gotten a lot more businesses engaged in idea generation and so forth. So the reality is our new product idea phase and actually new products coming through the system have improved every year, and I see that from a trend standpoint that will just get better and better. A piece of that is that we have gone in some cases to not only a development model that was heavily, I'll call it U.S. Developed market centric, to one that is much more engaging from a local market perspective. Take emerging markets. We have put far more technical capability in many of our local markets today that are a lot closer to their markets. In many cases, they have different market needs than a developed part of the world has. And that is, every time you go to China, you see a step change in our technical capability and the product portfolio that they're working on. And so we're gradually building out that capability in various parts of the world that are much closer to customers. So I feel a lot better about our product. It's not showing out completely in all of our results today. We still have to demonstrate that, but it is definitely getting better. And I feel a lot better about it today than I did 4 to 5 years ago.
Okay. Next question, please. Pat, any light at the end of the tunnel with consumer in office?
Why not?
I mean, you've had some inventory destocking. I assume that's...
Well, that kind of implies, okay, that it's bad or something.
In the U.S., the business is slow.
But actually, in the U.S., and again, I'll look at relatively, maybe versus the retailers, who we have a lot of respect for. But if you look at our consumer business, which has kind of been flattish, in the U.S., but the work in anybody that gets a chance to see the webcast for the consumer business, I think we'll continue to be blown away with the capability of the of our consumer and office business. 20% margin, business. It's got probably the best set of I'll call it customer relationships, and not talking about the U.S. context, that you would ever see, top to bottom in the organization. We continue to work with all the retailers on satisfying their needs for new products, and the like. Second quarter, we actually, for the first half of the year, we've just had a marvelous penetration story in our Filtrete air filter program with people like Walmart and so forth. That team just does a marvelous job, back on kind of the new product flow standpoint, just continues to do a very, very nice job. I think our team, in light of today's economy around office workers, the consumer, and where retailers are, and for the same category of products, are just doing really a fantastic job.
But does it feel like those inventory levels have settled?
Yeah, I don't. From an inventory standpoint, I don't. When I look at the consumer business, I have a tendency to want to look at it over kind of a multi-period basis because you are into, at times, an inventory correction period, or you got price increases going in where people are trying to maybe buy ahead and so forth. I don't really see a big inventory situation there. The retailers manage a relatively tight inventory. It's anybody who supplies to Walmart knows darn well that it's really kind of an order replenishment type model. So your inventories are not going to get too far out of whack within the retail chain these days. Now, the challenge becomes that when you get periods like back to school, or you get back to the Christmas season where you get orders, kind of larger orders, kind of to satisfy kind of a unique demand. Those are the periods you have to keep a closer eye on to make sure that you don't end up with a problem with sell-through during those periods, and then you get kind of the inventory backlash of that. But thus far, we're not seeing that.
Okay. Next question.
As we look at the healthcare business, obviously it's had a great year, and should we be concerned that there's a potential hiccup there back half of this year, and then even into 2009, as we start facing what will be much tougher comps?
No, I don't see that at all. Our healthcare business is just running phenomenally well, almost kind of across the board. I look at our dental businesses, very, very strong. And I'm not sure exactly the nature of your question. From a slowdown, are you concerned more of a slowdown standpoint? I think it's fair to say that there is an element of the oral care segment that's more discretionary than others, where people may defer activity. But generally speaking, if you have a, especially in the case of restorative type dental work, people have a tendency not to want to prolong that too long. Where you have a discretionary decision on, do I start a orthodontics treatment or not? Okay, you may be, you get a little bit of a delay in the system, but we have such a good new product pipeline coming across healthcare, specifically in the oral care segment, that's offsetting any kind of slowdown that's that we're seeing. So we feel very good about that business. There's one piece of the business there that's kind of a drug delivery business that ends up being a little more lumpy, because we do some R&D work in that, and it's heavily dependent upon royalty income and some stream of new product introductions. That one ends up being a little bit lumpier business, but the rest of them in there are all very, very, very solid.
You still expect CapEx to moderate in 2009?
Yeah, what we said on Tuesday, just to make sure everybody's kind of just current of what we said, is in 2007 we spent just under $1.5 billion. In 2008 we'll be someplace between $1.3 billion, $1.4 billion here. And then what we said on Tuesday was that CapEx would probably be more like $1.2 billion as we look forward here to 2009. Part of that is we're through the 19 plant builds. We're through effectively kind of the optical investment kind of phase and so forth. So that's about where our best read right now.
Okay, other questions that are out there? I think we've got time for a couple more.
Can
Can you comment a little bit on RFID? It seems like a few years ago you guys were pretty well positioned to make that a real growth business. And maybe I'm wrong, but my perception is that some of the system providers kind of came in and your products got more or less commoditized. Can you talk about that?
Sure. I'll try to kind of address that. I think your read's pretty accurate. We work on some certain segments. We didn't really find, at the end of the day, thus far, an area that we could explore in enough volume, okay, to make work that was differentiated enough for us to be successful in. Number of pilots that we've worked on and so forth. But they, really end up being almost more project by project basis, really, rather than something you could kind of spread on a broader basis. So, I think your read is pretty accurate there.
Okay, Charles.
Just to keep the conversation flowing.
We have a minute and 15 seconds to go, Charles. So if you want to sing or something, you can do
okay.
That.
Okay. So, let me offer this up. One might say that 3M's gotten the best valuation in the market at times when you've kind of combined a pretty compelling home run product opportunity like LCD films or the old pharma portfolio, with a sound operating plan. And I guess I'm just wondering if you what would it mean, or have you thought about trying to reallocate your R&D dollars towards more home run product opportunities rather than kind of the singles and doubles? I know that the market may reward you as your growth broadens across the segments, but I wonder how you think about the idea of allocating more R&D and development dollars to clear home run opportunities.
Hey, Chuck, that's a good question. What you would see in George's presentation from Tuesday, if you get a chance to go look at it, is a couple things. There's we're a very broad based company. As you're right. But realistically, we are focused on a number of areas that may provide more of a breakout opportunity, okay, above average. So I make two comments. One is we've actually hired a new executive in our technical organization around new technology development, acquiring new technology development, to help us bring in technology that maybe we're lacking today. Okay, that may help build a breakthrough idea. The guy's name is Stefan Gabriel from BMW, who kind of ran their new vehicle development process, their venture activity, and the like. A very very smart individual. He'll report into the head of our technical organization. But in George's presentation, we talked about we had the question earlier, solar. Okay, we think solar's got a breakthrough opportunity. We continue to think the air and water filtration space is a space that may give us the capability. We're working on power transmission, electrical power distribution. Okay, from a product called ACCR. Okay, which is a composite conductor cable that gives you the capability of running really twice the power down the same size cable. The challenge there is cost. We've got to get the cost down. We've got more than 20-some installations up and running now. We've not had a failure. So we're trying to work on getting the utilities comfortable with the product. At the same time, we're trying to drive down cost. But if we can get the cost down anywhere close to the current product, it's easily a multi-billion dollar opportunity if we could make that make that work. Continue to work at things in the area of food safety, okay, as an example, oil and gas. So there are areas that we're consciously focused on, not only technical resources but also marketing business resources, to try to figure out, is there a way of developing some of these areas as really kind of being breakout growth opportunities for the company. So we're doing all those. Thanks for the question.
Okay, great. I just want to read the disclosures before we thank Pat. Please note that all important disclosures, including my personal holdings disclosures and Morgan Stanley disclosures, available at the registration desk and on the website, www.morganstanley.com/disclosures. Thank you, Pat.